It's time for ER 101 with expert guests provided by the American College of Emergency Physicians. Here's Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to the American College of Emergency Physicians ER 101. We give you the 411 on your 911. We have a great show lined up today, and I want to get right to it and introduce my first guest, Dr. Brett Nix. He's Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at Wake Forest School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He's a fellow of the American College of Emergency Physicians. He's on their Public Relations Committee. He's the chairman. So welcome, Dr. Nix. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And what I want to talk about first today is the flu. It's just crazy. ERs have been inundated. People are saying it is the worst flu season to hit in the last 10 years. And it's funny, the CDC said last year was very mild, and some of the records say sometimes after a mild season, you have a really bad season. Is that what you've been noticing in the emergency room that you work in?
Absolutely. The emergency department here and within our community emergency departments have just been inundated with patients that have had flu or flu-like illnesses. You know, as you stated, it was so true. Last year, looking at the CDC's data, they stated it was the lowest case of influenza that has ever been recorded. And in looking at this year, in comparison, by this time last year, we had maybe 1,000 cases in the U.S. We've already had well over 25,000 cases, according to what the CDC is reporting. So we have been hit really hard.
Yeah, it's been terrible. I mean, there's been a lot of pediatric deaths this year. And what's interesting to me is the last time one of the isolates of this flu, the last time that the flu was so deadly, the CDC said back in 2003, so about 10 years ago, they had the most deadly flu season in the past 35 years. It had killed almost 50,000 people then. And the dominant form of influenza at the time, that strain, is the same strain that we're seeing now. And they're accounting for such a serious flu season maybe because of that. Have you noticed, do you think that the match for the vaccine every year, that the match this year was good? Is that why you think it's a problem?
Well, it's interesting because I think it's probably multifactorial in looking at it. The point that you have, you're right, it is a different strain than we've seen in the last handful of years. And so a lot of the vaccines had been focused around what we had seen in the preceding years. The other caveat, as you pointed out, is last year and the years before really wasn't that bad. So there's a question is, number one, have a lot of people just become a little bit less concerned about the flu and just did not participate in getting the appropriate immunization, the vaccine in time, and the fact that it came so early this year. You know, looking at what they're stating about it, we have a different dominant strain, but that being said, we still had an appropriate immunization. The question is, did we get enough of it out, and did we get it out early enough? And I suspect that's probably what we're seeing is the fact that the previous years had not been so strong, we just did not have as much of a robust interest perhaps in all of our patients.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I think in the beginning, the CDC had said only about a third of the population gets vaccinated. Over time, only probably 50% get vaccinated in any given year. But I think, you know, that's what happened. We probably were behind the eight ball. And then now what have people been telling you that they've had problems getting vaccines? They swear that there's not a shortage because, of course, it gets all this media attention once we start to see a bad early outbreak. And then but they're saying that that's spot shortages of the vaccine. Have you noticed where you were that there's been these shortages or not?
We've had some shortages. Oftentimes it's in some of our smaller communities, but not so much in the city where we're at. But as you state, though, there are some spot shortages. If you look at, you know, the map as it relates to the areas of substantial outbreak, the southeast and where I practice and where I live, huge, huge numbers as far as the prevalence of disease this year, especially compared to last year. There's other areas like California, which is very, very small, actually in the minimal categorization. I'm sure they have an overabundance of vaccines available. But if you compare those areas that have been hit hard, that's where people start noticing it. And obviously, they're going to seek out the vaccine almost immediately when you're having these epidemics. I think those are the areas that really have been hit hard, not only with the lack of availability for appropriate vaccinations, but also for those that are at risk that may be considering antiviral medications.
Yeah. Now let's talk about who should get the vaccine, because that's the best preventative measure to make sure you don't get the flu. So, you know, people have this misconception, I don't want to take the vaccine, it makes me sick, it gives me the flu. But, you know, we need to clear that up. That's not true.
You're absolutely right. I think that's probably one of the most common things that people state is, you know what, every time I get the flu vaccine, within a couple days, I start having some, you know, viral symptoms, or I get the flu anyway. What people need to recognize is that while the vaccination is not perfect, it does a great job of trying to identify the strains and build up your immunity so that you don't have, number one, as robust of an illness should you get sick, but also, more importantly, to prevent it. Now, the people that absolutely should have it are those we always think about, are the extremes of age. Kids, you know, that are quite young, age of 2 and under, those over 65. But more importantly, anyone who has a chronic or a long-standing disease illness, especially those that have underlying issues with either immune suppression, like cancer patients or otherwise, those that are pregnant, or those that have underlying respiratory disease, such as emphysema, those that have asthma. Those are really the high-risk categorizations in patients that absolutely need to have appropriate immunizations on an annual basis.
Right. And you say kids under 2, but if you're 6 months and under, you can't get the flu vaccine. And that's why it's so important for pregnant women. And there was a recent study that came out just this year that showed conclusively it is completely safe for women. It actually protects against miscarriage and fetal death to get the flu vaccine while you're pregnant. So it's, and pregnant women always get the worst complications too, because they're like immune compromised. So
absolutely. And I think that you're right. That's often missed. And one of the caveats and the things that we've noticed as well is oftentimes families that may have a young child, as you state, under 6 months of age, but have other children, sometimes they neglect to get the other children immunized because their six-month-old or under is not getting immunized. But what better way to protect your six-month-old than to have your entire family immunized ahead of time?
Yeah, no, it's true. This herd immunity, where if you immunize people around certain people that can't get the vaccine, it does protect them. And I think, you know, I know pregnant women, they like to steer clear of any kind of medication, but this new study showed that it actually helps protect the pregnancy, prevent against things like miscarriage, and you pass that immunity on to your very young baby. So for, you know, when you're, especially if your baby's going to be born during flu season and they're not going to have a chance to get the vaccine because they're going to be too young. So what other type of preventive things do you like to tell your patients quickly about how to prevent the flu besides the vaccine, which is number one?
Well, obviously, one of the most important things is just awareness. You know, when you identify either yourself of having flu or developing flu-like symptoms, is really to isolate yourself from the rest of your family, especially if you're someone who goes to work, avoiding going to work during those time periods. You know, the simple things that you can do, like hand washing and appropriate concerns as it relates to, you know, when you're shaking hands out in public in different areas, is having great hand-washing precautions in those interactions. Obviously, people will frequently carry around some of the hand sanitizer. We recognize there's great value in that, but we still advocate for very good hand-washing precautions. And just awareness, as stated before, if you should succumb to some of that illness, make the rest of your family or the people that are around you know that, you know what, I think I may be developing some symptoms, and it's best for them to go ahead and keep as much distance as possible.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And we're going to continue this conversation of the difference between a flu and a cold, because sometimes it's hard to tell. But I think these are very good tips to keep in mind and something that is important. And I think we'll touch on, again, people coming to work sick. You know, everybody has this idea that, oh, I got to work. I'm so important at work. But you don't want to touch that keyboard. So stay tuned and we'll continue to talk about the difference between cold and flu, and how you can protect yourself and your family.